Hello, it is Friday, June 12th. Welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Andrew Jung. The World Cup has finally arrived, and Team Korea won its first match against Czechia 2-1. We'll have more details on that and get a feel for the atmosphere directly from Guadalajara in news briefing shortly. During our in-depth news analysis today, we'll be picking apart the game against Czechia and a preview of next week's match against Mexico. Also in our headlines, former President Yoon Suk-yeol has been sentenced to 30 years in prison for sending drones to North Korea. Plus, on this week's edition of Movie Spotlight, we'll be talking about Steven Spielberg's latest sci-fi film and an indie comedy movie. All that and more on Korea 24. South Korea's national football team has come from behind to defeat Czechia 2-1 in their opening match at the 2026 FIFA World Cup, marking a strong start to their campaign. The Taeguk Warriors conceded first in the second half, but rallied with two goals to seal a dramatic comeback victory in Guadalajara, Mexico, on Thursday local time. Our KBS World Radio News reporter, Pae Ju-yeon, joins us in the studio to give us the latest on South Korea's win at this year's World Cup and other headlines of the day. Hello, Ju-yeon.
Hello, Andrew.
South Korea defeated Czechia 2-1 in their Group A opener at Estadio Guadalajara, Mexico, on Thursday at the 2026 FIFA World Cup. So the first goal of the game came from the Czech Republic.
Yes, that's right. The Czech Republic took the lead in the 58th minute when captain Ladislav Krejci headed in a long throw-in to beat goalkeeper Kim Sung-gyu. South Korea responded quickly. Hwang In-bum equalized in the 67th minute, chipping the ball over the keeper after breaking through Czechia's defensive line. 12 minutes later, substitute Oh Hyung-gyu completed the comeback, converting a cross to put South Korea ahead.
Other than Hwang and Oh, I understand that Kim Seung-gyu, the goalkeeper, also stood out in Thursday's match.
Yes, that's because he made two crucial saves late in the match to preserve the lead. South Korea's manager Ho Myung-bo said the victory has created positive momentum for the match against Mexico next week. This is what he said.
I think the fact that our players didn't give up and fought until the end to secure the victory has a much greater positive effect on our team. I would like to congratulate them once again on their victory.
Take note that the victory marks South Korea's first group stage opening match win in 16 years. The country now sits second in Group A behind Mexico, which also claimed 3 points Thursday with a 2-0 victory over South Africa.
The Taeguk Warriors will face Mexico at the same venue, correct?
Yes, on Thursday of next week, followed by a match against South Africa at Estadio Monterrey in Guadalupe the following Wednesday. South Korea is vying to advance to the round of 16 for the second consecutive time after the 2022 World Cup in Qatar.
And now we have on the line Mr. Lee Yun-jun, who was at the stadium to watch and analyze the entire game, and who is also a former football industry insider, joining us from Guadalajara, Mexico. Hello, Mr. Lee.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for connecting with us so late at night. Must have been a game to watch, a come-from-behind victory for Team Korea. First, though, Mr. Lee, what is the atmosphere like over there?
First of all, this is my first time in Mexico, and the atmosphere here is absolutely filled with World Cup excitement. You can really feel the passion that, like, Mexicans have for football. Hmm. There are also a lot of fans here, so the tournament atmosphere has been incredible and very energetic.
I'm so jealous that you're there. I wish I could be there as well. But what were some of the key moments in the match?
Yeah, for the fans, every moment was a key moment. The goals, the setbacks, and the tense moments, and the victory. We have to thank the players for creating such a memorable match. Hmm. And as someone who follows football closely, there were two particularly decisive moments. The first was when the coach substituted Oh Hyun-gyu for Son Heung-min in a crucial one-on-one situation. That change shifted the momentum and eventually lead to the winning goal. The second was Kim Seung-gyu's incredible save late in the match, which preserved Korea's lead and secured the victory.
Right. I think everyone was wondering why they're going to take Sonny out because we need him on the pitch. But the result was, I guess, happy enough for everyone. But to the next question, what was the loudest moment in the stadium?
Wow. Of course, definitely during the goals. If I had to pick one moment, it would be Hwang In-beom's equalizer, which rescued the team from a difficult situation. Honestly, it seemed like the Mexican fans celebrated it even more loudly than the Korean fans did.
I remember when we were down 1-0, I think every fan here was thinking, oh, not again. But back to the match, did anything surprise you about Korea's performance?
Well, I think Korea executed its game plan extremely well. The defensive organization, attacking tactics, substitutions, and in-game adjustments were all well prepared. It was great to see how that preparation translated directly into a positive result on the pitch.
I think there were concerns about Korea's performance before the World Cup and the days and weeks leading up to it. So the result speaks for itself. How many Korean fans, though, were at the match, and how many fans from Czechia showed up?
It looked like around 44,000 spectators attended the match. My impression was that there were roughly 10,000 Korean and Czech fans combined. What was really surprising was that most of Mexican fans in the stadium were cheering for Korea, so it honestly felt like a home match for the Korean team.
I think the Mexican fans might be remembering the 2018 World Cup when Korea helped it advance to the next round. So maybe there's a little bit of memory there. But how did the fans, perhaps Korean and Mexican, celebrate after the match?
Yeah, the Korean fans were obviously thrilled and celebrating enthusiastically. What surprised me again most was how excited the Mexican fans were. The atmosphere was so supportive of Korea that it felt like we were playing in the stadium back home.
And the Taeguk Warriors, who did all of the work today on the pitch, how did they react after the match?
Yeah, of course, since it was only the first match of the tournament, the victory seemed to give the whole team a significant boost in confidence. This win also puts Korea in a very strong position to reach the next round, and the players looked really happy after the match.
I can imagine. Mr. Lee, you will be attending the next game against, this time, Mexico.
Yeah, of course.
Well, best of luck to you. We hope you have fun. Again, I'm very jealous, and best of luck to Team Korea.
Okay, thank you.
And turning back to other headlines with Ju-yeon, former President Yoon Suk-yeol has been sentenced to 30 years in prison for sending drones to North Korea in an effort to justify his later decision to impose martial law. Ju-yeon, give us the details.
The Seoul Central District Court issued the verdict on Friday for former President Yoon, finding him guilty of benefiting the enemy, citing the likelihood that military secrets were leaked to North Korea after a drone crashed near Pyongyang. He was also convicted of abuse of power and obstructing the exercise of rights.
Was the court sentencing heavier than the punishment sought by the prosecution?
Well, with the ruling, the court concurred with the special prosecutor Cho Eun-sok's team's request for a 30-year sentence. The court berated Yoon for deliberately creating a national emergency to declare martial law for political gain, given his role as commander-in-chief, requiring him to safeguard the nation and his people. The court also handed down a 30-year sentence to former Defense Minister Kim Yong-hyun, a 15-year sentence to former Defense Counterintelligence Commander Yeo In-hyung, and a 3-year sentence suspended for 5 years to former Drone Operations Commander Kim Yong-dae.
And what did Yoon's lawyers say about the ruling?
His legal team maintained that the drone deployment was a legitimate military response to North Korea's trash balloon launches in 2024. His lawyers voiced deep regret over the ruling and vowed to appeal, arguing that the court had mischaracterized the military decision made in the national interest as an act of treason.
Shifting gears again, this time to President Lee Jae-myung's European tour, Lee and his Italian counterpart agreed to elevate bilateral relations to a special strategic partnership during their summit in Rome on Thursday. Chi-yun, fill us in.
President Yi, in a joint press announcement with Italian President Sergio Mattarella, said that the two sides will open a chapter of new cooperation toward co-prosperity based on their bond of accumulated trust and shared values. He said Seoul and Rome will jointly promote energy security and stability in supply chains despite disruptions and work together to facilitate the development of their cooperation in trade and investment. He said Mattarella highly regarded Seoul's resolve to resume dialogue and cooperation with North Korea as part of his vision for peaceful coexistence and shared growth and promised to support such efforts. The South Korean president said the two sides will adopt a strategic two-way action plan for the years 2026 through 2030 in a bid to sufficiently fulfill and monitor achievements from expanding cooperation at the UN and elsewhere in the international arena.
Let's now turn to Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump says negotiations for a peace agreement with Iran are nearing a final adjustment stage and that he expects to sign a deal as early as this weekend. Chi-yun, give us the details.
Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office Thursday, Trump said the administration had just made a great settlement in the war with Iran and that he expects to finalize and sign it over the next few days, likely via Vice President J.D. Vance in Europe over the weekend. Trump said Iran has agreed that it will never have a nuclear weapon and that the country will in no way, shape, or form have a nuclear weapon or purchase a nuclear weapon. The American president said the Strait of Hormuz will officially reopen and the U.S. naval blockade of Iranian ports will lift as soon as the deal is signed.
Was there any word from Tehran on Trump's remarks?
Though Trump said that Iran's supreme leader Mojaba Khamenei had approved the deal, the Iranian side gave a different response, with a spokesperson from Tehran's foreign ministry saying his country has not yet made a final decision.
And that's all for today's news briefing. Thank you, Jian.
Thank you, Andrew.
South Korea is off to a good start in the 2026 World Cup. This is the first time in 16 years that the country has won an opening game at the World Cup. Team Korea beat Czechia 2-1 in a comeback win in its opening match at Estadio Akron in Guadalajara, Mexico, much to the delight of fans here and, of course, there as well. The Tegut Warriors next face Mexico, one of the tournament's three co-host countries, at the same venue on June 18th. To talk about the game and predictions for Team Korea's next match against Mexico, we have two guests joining us on the line. First, we have our regular contributor, Yoo Ji-ho, the sports writer for Yonhap News. Ji-ho, hello.
Hi, it's great to be here.
And we also have another sports writer and football expert, Steve Price. Steve, hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. So we start today with the first question going to Ji-ho. For 16 years, South Korea couldn't score a victory at the FIFA World Cup opener. That is the opening game for Team Korea. This is only the fourth time that the Tegut Warriors have won their first World Cup match at the Cup, having previously done so in 2002, 2006, and 2010. Ji-ho, what's your overall assessment of the South Korea-Czechia match? How was South Korea's performance defensively and offensively as well?
Yeah, it was a come-from-behind win for Team Korea. I guess a win is a win is a win. You get 3 points any way you can in a World Cup. It's always nice to get off on the right foot. Getting that, taking care of the 3 points right out of the gate. Like you mentioned, three times previously, Korea won the opening match, and two out of the three occasions, Korea was able to progress to the knockout stage. And with the tournament having expanded to 48 countries, the first knockout match will be a round of 32. And, you know, getting 3 points puts Korea in a pretty good spot to get into the knockouts once again. You know, early on, I think Korea dominated the proceedings. They had the edge in ball possession. They spent a lot of time in the attacking zone, but they weren't able to finish their share of chances. But we've seen that film before. I guess it's nothing new for Korea to generate so many chances and not able to finish them off. I think a couple of looks that Son Heung-min had late in the first half were especially, you know, it was frustrating, I think, for fans to see him miss those kind of looks. And I think that, you know, Czechia's first goal kind of came against their run of play. You know, Korea would have, they came out as the more dominant side after the break, but it was a Czech Republic that scored the first goal just before the hour mark, but the Korea were able to, you know, fight right back. Hwang In-bum scoring the equalizer just about 8 minutes later. And then Hwang playing the facilitator, setting up Oh Hyung-gyu, who replaced Son Heung-min actually on the field. Scoring in the 80th minute, the goal, the eventual winner. And then, of course, Kim Sung-gyu, the goalkeeper, came up huge with a couple of big saves, pretty much match-saving stops in goal for Korea. So, you know, also Czechia had, you know, they had an eventual goal kind of called off on an offside ruling. So, you know, Korea got away with that one. The goal that they did score came off of a dead ball situation as well, with the long throw followed by Ladislav Krejci soaring to meet the ball with his head. And, you know, in the days leading up to this match, there were a lot of talk about how Korea had to be really careful with the set pieces just because of the height advantage that the Czechia would enjoy. A lot of players over 190 centimeters, 6'3"-ish. Korea weren't going to be able to match that height. And I think we saw, predictably, defense struggled a little bit on those situations. But other than that, you know, they only ended up giving up that one goal. And Kim Jong-gyu making some key saves in his own net. And so, you know, overall, pretty gratifying win to start this tournament for Team Korea.
A far from dominant win. Not that we were expecting one, but as Gio mentioned, a win is a win is a win. Steve, we go to you now. The first half was goalless, but the game sprang to life in the second period. How would you sum up the Korean team's performance against Czechia, and how different was the team's play in the first and second halves?
Yeah, I thought the first half was extremely comfortable for Korea, to be honest. I think Czech Republic had one, not even a chance, just kind of a crossing that Kim In-jae dealt with very easily. It's kind of, yeah, very dominant, very comfortable performance in that first half. But the problem is they couldn't find that breakthrough. We saw that a lot with Son Heung-min. He had 6 attempts on goal and he didn't score. It just feel like he needs that one goal. He's had a bit of a struggle this season in front of goal. He hasn't really scored. And I think when he scores one or even gets a really great assist, that's going to just, yeah, kind of, he's going to be amazing, because often with strikers, yeah, if you're on that kind of bad run, you kind of overthink things or you hit them a bit too quickly or that kind of thing. And you could see that with a few of his shots. But yeah, in the second half, again, they started off looking comfortable, but the goal they conceded from that long throw in is just, it's really shocking. Especially as I think everybody expected the Czechs to be relatively stable and decent in defence, and that their goal threats are going to come from set pieces. So you'd think that you'd have a better plan for dealing with long throws. There should be somebody kind of attacking the ball like players do from a corner for those throws. They just attack it and head it as far after the box rather than try to mark the players, because then when the player runs in, they've got an advantage. Which is how that goal happens. But then after that, you know, luckily the Czech Republic didn't kind of fall back and just defend and put everybody behind the ball. So there's still a bit of space for Korea to get in there, and they got that goal back. You can see some really great play. I think it's been huge that Wanganbom's back in the side. He's had all those injuries with Feyenoord and missed the end of the season. So the fact that he's back in the Korean team was huge. He was actually about to be subbed off on 60 minutes, but he insisted on staying on. He said, I've got enough fitness. I'm able to stay on. And it's a big call to keep him on, and it really paid off. So that's kind of how I saw the game. There's been, even after that, the defending was still a bit sloppy. There's only really three times that the ball was anywhere near the goal, and every time it seems that Korea's defenders switched off. There was Suchek's offside goal, which was offside. It's not luck or anything like that, but it still kind of shows he's kind of switched off a bit. And then Kim Sung-gi made a great save as well on 82 minutes, which kept Korea in the game, I think. So there's definitely some work to do defensively. But looking at the attack, Korea looked pretty good, some really great movements.
As Steve described, some room for improvement there for Team Korea. It was not, again, far from a perfect win. But Gio, we go back to you. What were the biggest factors that led to Team Korea's win today?
Yeah, I think the fact that Korea came back after conceding the first goal, it really showed a lot about their character as a team. They're really persistent on their attack. Basically, they kept knocking on the door until it opened and ended up scoring twice. You know, they kept trying to find the space behind the defense. Like Steve mentioned, a lot of good movements off the ball, away from the ball. The guys, sort of the playmakers in the midfield, guys like Lee Kang-in and Lee Jae-sung, are trying to feed attacking players up front with the passes. And they're, with Lee Kang-in connecting with Hwang In-bum on the first goal. And it was, Hwang In-bum getting the assist in the second goal. But, that goal really started with a long kind of sweeping pass from Park Seung-ho in the midfield. So, guys are, kind of consciously trying to exploit the space behind the Czechia defense, really paid off. And also, I think it was interesting that head coach Hong Myung-bo spoke about how the altitude training that they've done in Utah and also in Mexico, in Guadalajara, really paid off to him in his perspective, because if you compare the Czech team, they didn't do any altitude training leading up to this match. Their base camp is in Texas, and they only arrived in Mexico just a couple of days ago, or maybe the day before the match. So, it looked to me, or it looked to a lot of the members of the Korean staff, that the Czech Republic players, they really were tiring down the stretch. But in the last moments, in the late minutes, the Korean players were able to still kind of push front, stay aggressive on either end. So, and Korea's got another match coming up in the same stadium, same elevation, about 1,500 meters above sea level. And all the work that they have done in high altitude, at first, obviously, it was difficult for them, but they, gradually improved as far as their conditioning level, their fitness level. So I think it really paid off in this victory. And then, they've got, I think, reasons to look forward to playing Mexico in the same venue next week.
Well, to give listeners a sense of how high 1,500 meters is, think of playing the game near the summit of Mount Hala, which is around 1,900 meters high. So that's how high these games are being played. And football is, of course, a very physically exacting sport on the body. Well, there were lots of other factors involved in the game. But Steve, we go back to you. We're going to be talking about the next few games that Korea is having. Next up in Group A, we have the two opening match winners playing each other, Korea against Mexico. Mexico, of course, being one of the tournament's three co-host countries. That game will be at 7 p.m. June 18th local time, or here in Korea at 10 a.m. on June 19th, South Korean time, Korea Standard Time, that is. And the game will also be held at Estadio Guadalajara. Steve, what do we know about the Mexican team? Which Mexican players should we watch out for? How should South Korea prepare?
Yeah, so, of course, as one of the hosts, they've got the whole stadium behind them. I think Korea are probably a little bit lucky that it's in Guadalajara rather than at the Azteca in Mexico City, because If it was played there, yeah, it would feel really like a cauldron, I think. So there's that slight, maybe home advantage, you'd say, that Mexico have with all of the stadium. I think in this match against the Czech Republic, it felt like the stadium was on Korea's side. The fans seem to be on Korea's side, but it's going to be completely the opposite in this next game. Mexico are coming into the World Cup on great form. They've not lost in 9 matches. That's like the whole of 2026. But I'm sure you remember back in September, they played Korea and that was 2-2. And Mexico scored in the last minute to make it 2-2 in that game. So the very even sides. And if this was not played in Mexico, you'd say, it's probably a draw would be what you'd expect. But that home advantage maybe puts it slightly in Mexico's favour. Looking at their team, up front, they've got Raul Jimenez. He's actually just moved back to Wolverhampton. Of course, he played there for a lot of his career in the Premier League, along with Hwang Hee-chan, so they know each other very well. He had that horrific head injury. He nearly died on the football pitch, let alone his career ended. But he's come back from that and he looks back to his sharpest. He's actually the second highest scorer in Mexico's history. So he's definitely there. He already scored in the World Cup in Mexico's first game. And you can see that kind of cross into the box and he headed that one in. So that's a definite threat for Korea to look out for. Their other striker, Santiago Jimenez, is a bit like Son Heung-min in that he's had a terrible season for AC Milan. I don't think he's maybe scored 1 goal or no goals or something all season. But he's also very highly rated. So if he could get his confidence back, that could be a concern. And they've got a couple of exciting young players to look out for. This guy, Gilberto Mora, he's only 17. He's actually Mexico's youngest ever World Cup player, but he's extremely highly rated. So he's a player to keep an eye on if he comes off the bench. I think in general, you'd say Mexico and South Korea are very evenly matched. So it's going to be very exciting. And I think because they both won the first game, they're going to be both full of confidence. So we can expect some exciting attacking football in this match, which I think might suit Korea based on the way when they got the space in this game against Czechia, that they could get that great movement between the attacking players. So with Mexico trying to attack, that could help Korea a little bit.
Mm. So Mexico obviously having home field advantage and coming in on a very good streak. Gio, as a final thought, what's your outlook for the match between South Korea and Mexico? Steve, I think, highlighted the most important players that we should be watching out for from the Korean side. But what's your prediction for the game score?
Yeah, so I think, you know, like Steve said, Mexico obviously coming in great form. But got to remember, Korea almost beat Mexico in September last year in a friendly in the U.S. They gave up the late equalizer, ended up in a 2-2 draw. But Korea played really well in that one. So maybe they could have some, you know, feel some confidence based on that experience. And also the fact that Mexico's, you know, one of the best defenders, if not the best defender, Cesar Montes, was red carded in the opening match against South Africa. So he's not available against South Korea. He's automatically suspended for that one. So a bit of a lucky break for Korean side as well. But I do still think that Mexico are the favorite team. The home side, the atmosphere could be, you know, intimidating, I would think, for some of the newer guys from the Korean side. So, you know, being the pessimist, I guess, I'm thinking Mexico will take that match probably. But I think Korea will keep it pretty close.
Mm. For the record, Jiho predicted 1-1 for the game against Czechia. Steve, what do you think next week's match will pan out, or how do you think that will pan out? And please give us your predictions as well.
So an interesting thing is, like, I felt like Korea's best attack is when you have Oh Hyung-gu up top and then Lee Gang-in and Son Heung-min either side of him. But we haven't seen that recently. And it turned out that Oh had some virus before the match. And so that's why he maybe didn't even like play in the previous match or something like that. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Korea switch it up and have that front three of Oh Young-gu leading the line with Son and Lee Gang-in either side of him. As I said, I think it's going to be a very attacking game. Both sides will be confident because they've got their 3 points. And you probably only need 4 points to qualify, unless there's a load of freak results. 4 points will be enough to get through as at least third place in the group. So having 3 points already, both sides will be very confident that they can qualify for the next round. And they'll be going out all attack. So I've got the feeling it's going to be, the last time they played, it was 2-2. I think it's going to be 2-2 again this time.
A high-scoring match due to the aggressive nature that the teams are expected to put up in the game again between Mexico and Team Korea. But that's all for today. That was Yoo Ji-ho from Yonhap News. Thank you, Gio.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And also Steve Price, a sports writer and football expert. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index spiked 359.67 points, or 4.63%, on Friday to close at 8,123.62. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ gained 32.12 points, or 3.22%, to close at 1,029.05. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr. It's more than just a game, it's our DNA.
Continuing on with the excitement from Mexico, we open up our Korea Trending segment with sounds from the 2026 FIFA World Cup's opening ceremony at Estadio Azteca in Mexico City, where Ije, the singer and actress of K-pop Demon Hunters fame, sang the World Cup anthem DNA with Italian musician Andrea Bocelli. So we say, hey. And for this and other trending stories for today, we have Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Andrew.
So, what is our first story today?
At the opening ceremony of the FIFA World Cup in Mexico City on Thursday local time, Korean-American singer EJ performed the tournament's anthem titled DNA with opera singer Andrea Bocelli. And this World Cup anthem holds a message of unity over the games, with this year's edition being the first to be co-hosted by three countries, Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And it also involves the biggest number of participating nations to date at 48 teams.
And other than performing the anthem, did EJ provide other creative input?
An important line in the song, Although I Fall, I Stand Up Again, was performed in Korean as the creative mind behind the mega-hit animated film K-pop Demon Hunter's biggest hit song, Golden. It is believed EJ played a role in including the Korean lines there.
For listeners that might have picked up, there were some Korean words in that song. But what has been the response like so far to EJ's performance?
The related clips continue to see hits go up. Up upon being uploaded, and social media is abuzz with praise over the performance, especially with Korean fans expressing great pride in having Korean artists perform in back-to-back World Cups.
And are there more K-pop artists lined up to take the stage here at the World Cup?
Yes, Blackpink's Lisa will also open a World Cup event in Los Angeles on Friday local time, the first ever halftime show of the World Cup final, scheduled for the 19th local time at the New York New Jersey Stadium in New York, will have BTS as one of the headliners alongside Madonna and Shakira.
Some big names there. And what's the next story of the day?
Well, the next story is quite shocking and somewhat gruesome, so listener discretion is advised. We had a report of a discovery of human leg at a recycling center in Incheon, which has been trending online.
Not your typical Friday. A severed human leg, pretty graphic. I'm sure that came as quite a shock to everyone. Can you give us more on the story, please?
Sure thing. Police in Yeonsu District announced on Thursday that a worker at a recycling sorting station in the district in Incheon found on Wednesday afternoon what appeared to be a human leg. The leg was cut off around the knee and wrapped in bandages, so the worker who discovered it wasn't sure what it was at first. After pulling it out and realizing what it was, they reported it to the police.
Quite the change of tone here. We were talking about the World Cup and something very serious. But what can we expect next in this story?
Well, we have police who requested a genetic analysis of the leg's tissue, but because it was so damaged, it's hard to say the gender or age of the owner of the leg. With the foot size being around 220 millimeters, it's a bit on the smaller side, so there's higher probability that it belongs to a young child or a female adult. So police have asked schools in the area to cooperate and check for prolonged student absences in the past week.
I think we are eager to move on to the final story of the day. What do you have for us, Dan?
K-pop boy band Big Bang is set to go on a world tour for the first time in nearly a decade, 9 years to be exact, to mark its 20th anniversary.
It's already been 20 years since their debut, so they've been around for a while. For those who may not be familiar with the group, however, Dan, can you give us a brief intro?
Yes, the five-member boy band debuted in 2006 and produced numerous hits, including Bang 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 and Fantastic Baby, while sweeping hundreds of awards, including major American and Japanese honors. They became trailblazers as idol group members that actively participate in producing their own music. Every member launched a successful solo career, with G-Dragon being the most active and influential one.
There was, once upon a time, a period when you could not avoid hearing one of their hits wherever you may be in this country. But what can we expect from the seasoned artists in the upcoming concerts?
The group's agency, YG Entertainment, released a poster promoting their world tour via its official social media channels on Thursday. Big Bang has unveiled plans for a world tour to mark the special anniversary, and it's set to begin in Korea in August, then continue through February 2027, with 31 shows set to be performed across 18 cities, starting with three in Goyang, Gyeonggi Province, and then they head to the U.S., and then they will also be performing in various parts of Asia and Oceania, with stops in Taipei, Singapore, Hanoi, and Hong Kong.
And other than being older and more experienced, what kind of changes can fans expect from Big Bang during these concerts?
Well, not all founding members will be present. It will be a trio of G-Dragon, Taeyang, and Taesung. Fans already got a taste of the new-look Big Bang as they made a historic return to the global stage at the Coachella Valley Music and Arts Festival this April. The tour is part of a broader series of projects commemorating the group's 20th anniversary.
I think the fans will be eager to see perhaps the fourth member rejoin the group if possible. But that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you for all the stories, as usual, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
How do I know you didn't abandon him to save your own skin?
No one feels as lost more than I.
It is time now for our Friday segment, Movie Spotlight, where we discuss some of the coming hits at the box office and give our listeners a few ideas on what to watch this weekend. Joining us in the studio today, again, are our movie critics, Jason Bechervais. Hello, Jason.
Hello.
And we also have Darcy Paquet. Darcy.
Hello.
It's great to see you two again. Our first film is Manok, Ibanni Jangmanok. Darcy, this week you are recommending this low-budget independent comedy from Korea, from debut director Lee Yoo-jin. The film tells the story of a middle-aged lesbian woman who moves back to her hometown in the countryside, or as it is called here, Sigol, after 20 years of living in Seoul. Tell us about the film.
Yeah, so it's been screening on the film festival circuit for over a year. Premiered at last year's BFI Flair London LGBTQIA+ Film Festival. And then, you know, it's gone on to screen at Palm Springs International Film Festival, the Frauen Film Festival in Germany, Montreal Asian International Film Festival, and then in Korea as well. Like, it won an audience award at Pucheon Fantastic Film Festival. And so now it's getting its theatrical release. I mean, the director, Yoon Jin, has kind of been making a reputation for herself with short films. She made a number of queer short films. And then, you know, this feature has been successful, so she's kind of established herself as this kind of new name in contemporary Korean cinema.
Widely acclaimed. And I would also argue that it's a theme that's been underexplored and represented in Korean cinema. But Darcy, can you tell us more about the plot?
So the main character is named Chang Man-ok, which happens to be the same name in Korean as the Hong Kong film star Maggie Chung. But Chang Man-ok has been running this lesbian bar in Seoul for 20 years together with her partner. And so now, you know, she's getting into middle age. She feels like she doesn't really connect with the local gay community like she used to. And she's clashing a lot with the people around her. She also gets a text that her mother's died. It's kind of a rude text. Her brother basically says that she doesn't have to come if she doesn't want to. And, you know, but she has this big fight with her partner in Seoul. And then, I mean, sort of on impulse, but, you know, you feel like it's kind of been building up for a while. She decides to close the bar and then move back to her hometown without telling anyone. And so she arrives in this village. It's a really tiny village, you know, kind of rural, agricultural. Her mother has left her home, so she has a place to stay. But, you know, she sees that her ex-husband, she's on really bad terms with him. He's using his position as village chief to kind of benefit himself, to punish people who don't support him. He's basically acting like this mini dictator in this small village. And so she clashes with him on a few occasions, and then ultimately she decides that she's going to run against him in the next election for village chief.
So I think the plot sounds a little serious when you're talking about the death of a mother, but then you get the feeling of, you know, this is going to be a comedy when, you know, you find out she's going to run against her ex-husband for village chief. So I must ask, the film describes itself as a comedy. Is it funny?
I mean, it is. I think it's funny because of the cast and the characterizations. Man-ok is played by an actress named Yang Mal-bok, who, you know, at the age of 53 is kind of entering this really exciting stage in her career. You know, she, I mean, pretty much mostly appears in independent films, but she had a bit of a breakout a couple of years ago with a movie called The Apartment with Two Women. And, you know, she brings such energy to this role. You know, she's the kind of character who is world-weary in one sense, but, you know, stubborn, and she's not afraid of anyone, and she's not willing to sit by and kind of let people mistreat other people. And so she's, you know, the engine that kind of drives the film. But then outside of her, there are a lot of other really interesting characters who are well-drawn and well-acted. You know, if you look at the synopsis, it kind of sounds like this high-concept, you know, situational comedy where, you know, you have the, you know, these two... you know, the ex-husband and her running together for the position of village chief. But it's really kind of more of a character-centered comedy where, you know, the clash of characters and the different personalities make for the humor in the film.
Well, I guess the unconventional nature of the themes discussed in this film provokes the question, Darcy. Do you think it will find a decent audience here?
I mean, it is quite rare for independent films to really break into the mainstream. And, you know, this movie opened at number 21. So, I mean, that's not hugely encouraging. But I think, you know, it will stick around for a while. It'll build some awareness. You know, it'll sell, I don't know, maybe 500 tickets a day. And so, you know, if we give it some time, then I think it should be able to find a supportive and enthusiastic.
I would argue maybe it's something that everyone should make an effort to watch just because it involves the LGBTQIA plus community. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to Jason now because he has another film that we're going to discuss.
Yes.
Jason, your pick this week is the new Steven Spielberg sci-fi epic, Disclosure Day.
Yeah.
And I think we've all seen trailers of this on YouTube or something. But does this new film see the famous Hollywood director return to his roots?
Oh, yes. You know, it's no secret that Steven Spielberg, you know, he's someone I grew up with, you know, as a kid watching movies. And, you know, actually, I credit him as a really big influence on me. And, you know, just my attitudes towards cinema. And but, yeah, you know, he does delve into this. He's constantly, you know, asking that question, you know, are we alone in this universe? And you see, you know, movies, E.T., of course, and or The Extraterrestrial as well, you know, otherwise known as, and then Close Encounters of the Third Kind. you know, those movies from the 1970s and early 1980s. Yeah, he's also returned to the theme in movies like War of the Worlds, and, you know, even in one of the Indiana Jones movies, he kind of explores it too, the Crystal Skull. And so, you know, he's obviously one of Hollywood's most celebrated directors, and he's tackled a whole range of themes. But this is something that he does come back to, you know, quite repeatedly, I would say. And yeah, and in 2026, you know, this question, again, I think is being asked at times, at a time when, you know, previously classified material kind of has, you know, further mystified this question, you know, whether, you know, terrestrial life is actually, you know, is out there. I think it was Barack Obama who said earlier on this year, I think in February, yes, aliens were real, but I haven't seen them, you know. So kind of like, maybe it's true, it probably is true, but we have no evidence. Yeah, I cannot, you know, confirm or deny this constant, you know, presence that might be there. But yeah, this movie definitely tackles that question.
It's certainly an entertaining question. But back to the movie, tell us a bit about the story. I take it we'd see aliens.
But, you know, Steven Spielberg he's not Roland Emmerich, and, you know, these aliens aren't coming down to invade and colonize our world. But yeah, just in terms of the story, we're basically literally thrown right into the narrative at the beginning of the movie. And it follows this former tech whiz. He's now working for this shadow government agency. This guy's played by Josh O'Connor, the British actor. Loads of British actors in this movie. And he's cornered by this agency, basically at a wrestling match. They've kidnapped his daughter. Now, this agency is played by another British actor, Colin Firth. And so he and his girlfriend, played by Eve Husson, they managed to get away. He has this kind of it's kind of an object of an alien origin, and they're trying to get their hands back on it. And this figure that works for this government, or used to work for this government organization or shadow government agency, you know, he's got his hands on a lot of classified footage that he wants to kind of show to the world. He wants to be this Edward Snowden kind of figure. And then meanwhile, in Kansas City, we have this, it's quite, you know, there's quite a lot that goes on in this movie. A Kansas City weather presenter played by Emily Blunt, another Brit, she's got ambitions to host her own show. And then one day, you know, she's in her apartment in Kansas City with a partner, and then this bird kind of, this red cardinal flies into her apartment, and then lo and behold, she starts speaking Polish, Russian, and then Korean, which I thought was quite funny. And then she's having this, because there's some issues with North Korea, and so they're talking about that in the news, and she's able to communicate with the guests, but during a broadcast, she basically has a meltdown, spatting out all sorts of gibberish, and guess what? The former government, shadow government agency employee, he understands what she's saying, and they basically form some sort of connection. But they want to get the word out there that they're, you know, they're really not alone.
Well, how does this new film compare to Spielberg's other films that you mentioned today? And, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of one of his alien movies. I won't say which one.
Do tell.
Well, just because it'll undermine my, I guess, objectivity and, you know, my host.
Movies never going to be. It's always subjective. Anyway, yes.
I won't say which, but I'm a fan of the director.
Me too, yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Honestly, I went in with, you know, fairly high expectations. I don't like all of Spielberg's movies, but, you know, this is something that I think he's really passionate about. When he's really passionate about something, often, you know, he produces, like, a masterpiece. I'm sorry to report, this was a big, 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 big disappointment. And there are a few reasons for that. It does feel very, very old school. It feels like he's got his, you know, his familiar team there, his DP, you know, his music composer John Williams and all the rest of it. And yes, there are moments where it feels like he's creating that magic, but it just took so long to get there. And then and the characters, I mean, we are thrown in at the beginning and we don't know much about them, and it's hard to really connect with any of them. Well, at least maybe it was because I was tired, and it has been a long week, an arduous week. But I just had real issues with connecting with the characters. And then the whole spectacle of it all, like, Spielberg is such a, you know, a great filmmaker, great technician, and he's a great storyteller. But I just felt that there wasn't much in the way of kind of spectacle. I went to see it on an IMAX screen. I was like, well, why did I come and see it here? And there's this one sequence on a train track, you know, involving a train and a collision. But it's not that great. It just feels constantly old school, the whole thing. And so I think older audiences might, and the reaction has been interesting. Some critics have really got behind it. They're talking about how it's, you know, Spielberg at his best, and, you know, delving into that, you know, a decades old question. And he's clearly very, you know, curious about it. And there are moments where it does feel like, okay, he's onto something here. This feels a bit like, this does feel like Spielberg and some of the themes that he's repeatedly in his films. But to me, it just came across as a bit superficial, and I just struggled with it the whole way through.
Well, the name, I guess, Spielberg, begs the question whether or not this movie is going to be a good box office hit.
I don't think so. I could be wrong. I could be really wrong. It's projecting not to do great figures in North America, $35 million. And I just don't see young people watching this. This comes on the back of Backrooms, and which we talked about, and Obsession, you know, which have generated, both of them, over $200 million. And they're, you know, very popular with young people. I heard a statistic for Backrooms, like 75% were under the age of like 35 or something. You know, so this movie, I think it's people like me who grew up watching Spielberg. And yeah, the nostalgia can bring back those different demographics. You know, maybe you go with your kids and... But it to me, it wasn't magical. Like, for Spielberg, I want to be taken into a different world, and that didn't happen this time with me. And you know, when you watch his films, I rewatched Close Encounters a few weeks ago. Such a wonderful movie. It just transports you, right? And he has such a way of just capturing. Just storytelling, bringing it to life. And I just didn't feel that. It didn't work for me here.
Darcy, what do you think?
Oh, it's funny because I really liked it.
That's great. You know,
I mean, it does require some kind of suspension of disbelief.
And, it does, yeah.
You know, I don't really want to talk about the ending, but I mean, if you think about the ending logically, like, I don't know. In some ways, the real world kind of undercuts the drama of the movie ending. And yet, I don't know, I was open to it.
Well, no, it's great, Dyson, because the thing is, you are saying, I mean, I'm basically repeating what I've read, you know, online from, you know, established critics, that some people really do like it. And maybe I just wasn't in the right mood. I don't know what it was, but yeah. I just wasn't fully immersed in the story. And yeah. Maybe
I do agree that it's old school.
It is old school.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
On a second view.
That's all we have time for today, but those were the arguments for and against watching Spielberg's latest movie. That was Jason Bechervais. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you.
And Darcy Baquet. Thank you, Darcy.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for today's edition of Korea 24, but we'll be back on Monday. A reminder to our listeners that Korea 24 is produced by an all-star team, starting with our fantastic editor, Daria Kim, our very calm and patient producer, Yoon So-hyung, and our veteran leader, producer Kim Bum-su. I've been your host, Andrew Jung. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye. Oh,
KBS World Radio.